talking with Miss Lorena Fine, director of the Harford County Library, in her office in Bel Air on Friday, March the 1st, 1974. Hello, Miss Fine. You came to Harford County in 1958 and started working here. Mm-hmm. What brought you here?
I had been working for about 10 years in a Fort Detrick Medical Technical Library. Well, Frederick was my hometown, and I was pleased for the opportunity to work there close at home, watch my nephews grow up, and be with my family. And as a matter of fact, my family had a lot of doctors and medical background, so that I thought I was doing a great thing to be a medical librarian. But actually, I found I was very bored with it and didn't know any of the proper terms. And as a matter of fact, the scientists with whom I was working had been trained in research and got along perfectly well without me, so that I didn't feel useful. And I was remembering the happier times when I had been in public library working at the Enoch Pratt Free Library, where I got my start. So I was looking for an opportunity to get back in public library work, and this was an opening. When I came to interview here, I found that I felt very much at home, because it's the same type of rolling hills and wooded lands. We don't have the mountains that we have in Frederick County, but it was the same type of land, and I just felt right at home here.
Well, that's a good. Well, when you start nightmare, wouldn't
it? Yes, it was. And of course, I met very pleasant people right away who made me feel at home, too. But that was a very difficult year. To begin with, when I was looking for a place to live, to move myself down here, I had been starting since October to find a place to live. And it was a year of many snows, 1957 and 58. When I started to come down to look for a place to live, it snowed three or four times. So Mrs. Cameron, who was then the head of the president of the Board of Trustees, said, "Well, don't worry. I have a friend who has a very large house, and you'll be able to stay with her until you have a chance to look around and find yourself a place. It'll give you a chance to look around." And this was Miss Eloise Wilson, so I went to stay with her for a couple of weeks, and I've been there 15 years now. So we found we got along very well, and it was nice to have somebody to go home to, and she was glad to share her home with somebody. So I'm like the man who came to dinner. I said that I'd never had that I had been bored at Detrick, and I want to say right here that I never had a dull moment in Harford County. Now, to go on with the snows, we had more snows the rest of the year. I moved here on New Year's Day, 1958. That was, and I had been brought up, you see, with Dr. Wheeler. He was the head of the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, and quite a famous figure there, a real character, too. And he had instilled in us the importance of keeping the library open come hell or high water. We were a service organization. We were going to be there regardless of weather or anything. So when the first big snow came that winter, and here I was living 5 miles out the Emerton Road, I put on Miss Wilson's father's hip boots, and I started wading into the library.
That was quite a hike, wasn't it?
Well, I got up to the Emerton Road with the wires falling all around me. The electrical wires were breaking and snapping and sparking all around me. But I got so far I was afraid to turn and go back, so I kept on going. I got into the Emerton Road, and then I hitchhiked. So I got right into town just about the time all the merchants had decided it was no use to open up that day. Mm-hmm. They were going to close up and go home. I remember Jean Grabeel was cleaning off his sidewalk, and he closed up. And I went in someplace and got a loaf of bread and a couple cans of soup and some staples like that, tea and tea bags or something. And I was prepared to keep house in the library. So I got myself in there. We were in the old church building, which was up there next to Harrison's wooden wicker shop. Well, it's where the wooden wicker shop now is. So, and my office was down in the basement. It was this old church with the plaster falling off and the stained glass windows. And the lights kept going off and on all the time because the power was affected by the storm. But I had enough off and on to be able to heat up water for tea and cook my soup and even just occasionally a little light on the book situation. I was there 3 days.
Oh,
I slept on a library table.
Oh, my.
And that was when the, I guess it was the, that was the March storm. We had two bad ones that year.
You were by yourself?
Yes, I was by myself. No, and nobody could get in. We had very few customers, but there were a few people walking up and down Main Street who happened to come in and were glad to get a book, take home and read while it was snowed in. Miss Wilson couldn't get to town, and out there we were without light and heat for 9 days when I finally did get back.
How'd you get back?
Oh, well, finally she came in and got me.
You didn't have to hitchhike?
After 3 days. No, I didn't have to hitchhike home. Things were melting down then. But that was in my tradition of library service, that you had to do these things, but really it was about the end of it, because after that I never tried to, I never after that slept on library tables or felt that I had to keep open regardless of what the weather was.
How did the board react to it?
I'm not sure they ever knew about it. If they did, they just laughed. But Gene Street lived right across there. He and his and Mary Teresa lived right across. And I went over and visited them and watched TV one night. And I got an awful lot of filing done. I was trying to do a lot of improvements and arrangements. And I got quite a lot of work done. It was kind of fun. But now, one thing I learned about Harford County then that I had never forgotten is that everybody here lives in lanes or out in the country and commutes from country dwellings, and they're not right on the road, so it isn't too easy for them to get here. So now I go along with the rest of the world, and if it snows hard and the schools close up and my staff can't get to work, and I know they're not going to be able to get to work, I don't protest, I don't fight it, I give in. And these are closed too.
No more sleeping on the tables.
No more sleeping on tables.
That first year, you had mentioned before that you had a big job collecting books, calling them out of people's houses.
Oh, yes. Well, we used to go and we were so anxious to get good books and not to miss an opportunity to get anything that was really good. So whenever anybody had books they wanted to dispose of, I would go to their homes and pick out what we wanted. And I have mental pictures of myself staggering around with boxes of encyclopedias and all kinds of big heavy tomes that were much too heavy for me really to struggle with, and I don't do that anymore either. I remember going to, when the old Curtis School was being auctioned off, going down there and coming home with a load of books to be sorted out. I don't know where we got others, but I can see myself at the back of, an old carry-all panel truck, sorting books, a whole truckload of books, and a great many westerns that we came by from some point. But and the whole library at that time had been built up largely by contributions from people who were cleaning out their attics, so that we were overloaded with the last year's Book of the Month clubs and Literary Guild things that were really not getting very much use, because by the time people are willing to give those away, their prime usefulness is past. So that first year, we discarded an awful lot more books than we ever added.
But how did you discard them?
Oh, well, this is always a problem with libraries, but my method that year was to take them to the city, to the dump. And I couldn't get anybody to carry them away for me, so I loaded up the truck and took them up to the, well, there were a couple junkyards in Havertagrass then that would buy old paper. I was trying to get money for them. And for a while, you could get a little bit for your waste paper, but now you can't anymore. Anyway, with this truck loaded up, I went hunting the dumps in Havertagrass and found my way to the city dump, which is up on top of the heights overlooking the river in a very beautiful location. And it was a very exciting experience and somehow reminded me of Valkyrie with the river down there and these piles of ashes and the smoke rising in spirals over the heights of the Susquehanna. So I always thought that was a beautiful place for a dump. But
you no longer dispose of books that way,
no? No, no, we don't. In fact, we sell a good many of them now and apply what we can get out of the sale to purchase the new books that we need.
So your library then was heavy on fiction, I take it, and rather than referencing.
Yeah, it was. As we bought more books, one of the things that I found in library work was that nothing you ever have learned is superfluous, and every bit of past experience comes in handy in the library. I had way back in high school, I had a little course in journalism, and that was all the training I ever had in newspaper writing. But it must have been a fairly good, substantial course at that, because I'm the principal public relations man now. Until this last year, I did all of the public relations and all the writing for the newspaper. And the Aegis used to tell me that I did very well. They didn't have to rewrite the stuff I sent down there anyway, and they always used it. And I had worked in radio, all that experience was to the good in libraries, so I knew how to go about contacting radio stations and get spots and how long to make the spots and how to write the advertising. And at the Enoch Pratt Library, when I was there, I had not only worked in the circulation department and in the cataloging department, but I worked in the exhibits department and spent a year trimming windows.
Mm-hmm.
So, here I was preparing exhibits and cataloging the books and managing circulation routines so that everything I ever learned came in handy. One of the first reference questions I got when I was in Harford County was about the Vinegar Bible. The question was, did the Susha Church have a Vinegar Bible? Fortunately, from my past training, I knew what a Vinegar Bible was, and I didn't know whether Harford County had one, but it was only a telephone call away to find that the Susha Church did have one. And of course, you know what the Vinegar Bible is. It's the vineyard, which is misspelled. And the Church of England, having made this mistake, sent their bad copies to the colonies to get rid of them. And now they're collector's items and they're valuable.
The first year, we did have some help. Another girl came.
There were several people who were on my staff then who are still with me. We were about six, I think, then, and we had a... And then the branch people, about another six in the branches. We had an old bookmobile then that had sides that opened up so that it was like the old Christopher Morley book van with sides. Well, you could walk around the outside and pick out your books. It was very picturesque.
Parnassus
on wheels. And, but help was very hard to find. The professional help, trained help, was impossible to get in small towns like Bel Air. I spent all my vacations trying to write recruiting letters, and to no avail. Anyone who... There weren't enough people going to graduate school then and getting library degrees, and those who did wanted to go into the big cities to work where they'd get a bit more money, and also because there was more entertainment in the cities, too. We did have one girl for about, she only lasted a month. She came from Rutgers and was not at all happy here. I gave her, the first job I gave her was to clean up the collection of foreign books that we had because she was well versed in German and French. So I heard this great thumping and clatter upstairs, and I went up to see what was going on. She was on top of a ladder, throwing books all over the floor in a great pile. And I thought any librarian that didn't care any more about books than that, even the ones she was going to keep, would get their backs broken tossing them around. So we didn't get along too well, and anyway, she wanted to work in some more researchy kind of library. But this brought up the question of where were we ever going to get any help, and it was very, very discouraging, really. So what we finally did was to train our own, and with the help of some federal money, we set up a training class here, which became a model for a state training class. And this is one of the things that I'm proud to have had a part in, because it wasn't original. It was our own pushing that got it started. See, I had been in a training class at the Enoch Pratt Library in the days of the Depression. Dr. Wheeler started a training class there. It was a 9-month training class. We went to school in the morning and then worked in the library in the afternoon, and we worked for 3 weeks in each of the departments of Enoch Pratt. It was a very thorough indoctrination. And even when I went to library school at Simmons after that, I felt that in many ways the old training class was a better preparation. And of course the Simmons is more theoretical and the Pratt training class is more practical, but it was quite a good course. And so I was brainwashed about training classes, and that was what immediately came to mind when I couldn't get the kind of professional help. Wasn't available. So we started out with just the people who were already employed, and several counties went together. We had Baltimore County and Cecil County and Harford County had the training class the first year. And we got somebody to teach a reference course for all our employees that year. And that was so successful that the next year we had a 5-county training class, adding Anne Arundel County, what was the other one? Carroll County came in on that one. And that year we taught fiction, had a fiction course, had the people read very widely in different types of fiction, and a lot of concentration on describing books and writing reviews and how to select your books, and then in all the various categories of books that appeal to different readers, and trying to suit the interest of the readers with the kind of material that you have in your library and knowing the material well enough to be a good reader's advisor. So that was so good that then, as I said, the state took it up and began, and well, Baltimore County also was very interested, and they had a training class for several years manned by their own staff. They taught it to make employees for themselves, really. And we were privileged to have always been very friendly with Baltimore County, and they let us send people to their training class. So that this has gone on now for about 10 years, and we've been adding to our well-trained personnel all the time. Every year we have more and better trained people. Also now, since in those early days, you see, there was no library school in Maryland, and it was hard to recruit people from out of state because they tend to go to school in their home state or they tend to go to work where they graduate. But we did finally get a library school started at the University of Maryland, which made more people available in this area.
Was this in downtown school or
a college? No, it's a college park. And now the employment market is such that it's getting to be, I have a number of applications on file from which to choose usually, which is a very unusual situation. We still have the training class, however, because there are certain jobs that a professional doesn't, you don't have to have a professional to do. And we find that we can do quite well with these trainees and get people who live and here in the county and who are likely, who make their home here.
A typical day for you in the library back in 1958 wasn't like it was today, was it?
No, it certainly wasn't. I had a lot of, well, I can remember shoveling the snow, for instance, I guess, and scrape off the ice. And I had to drive the truck around to all the branches a lot, carrying the books. We had school collections in those days when we'd have to pack up the books and take classroom collections to the schools. This was a terrible chore, going, getting them packed up and hauling them out there. And then they would keep them about 6 weeks and they'd come back. Well, at about the beginning of the summer, of course, all the school collections were coming back. And we would just be deluged with these piles and piles of little books and so dirty. I know. I just had nightmares. I would see dirty books in my sleep and have to sort them all out. Well, we did an awful lot of throwing away again.
But the school didn't have libraries?
No, they didn't have libraries. But now they do, of course. And then in a couple of years, we were working out a system that instead of taking the whole collection of books to the schoolroom, we took the bookmobile to the school and parked out there, and then the children come on the bookmobile and pick out their own books. It was a sort of a library experience, too, and much better than just throwing books into the classroom. And it made our book collection go farther, too. Well, in those days, I did a lot of the cataloging, too. Wasn't something that I loved to do, but was a necessity. For a while we had a cataloger, and then for a while we didn't again. Employees come and go. And going back to the training class again, even before we had the training class, I found that it was very useful to train people and to send them to school as much as I could. So there was a course given in cataloging at the University of Delaware, and I sent a couple of people up there. A girl who does cataloging for us now to a large extent, runs the processing department, had been working in a sewing factory, and she came to me, and she came as a mender to do pasting and pickpocketing and so forth. And she just took an interest in the catalog and used to peer over my shoulder and ask questions a lot. So when this course became available at the university, I asked her if she'd like to go, and she did want to go, so I sent three people to that course that year, and she was the one who made out best, and so now she's running the department.
Oh, good.
Because, of course, I was finding other things to do all the time. I'm glad to be relieved of it. Reference, of course, was one of the things that I was always most interested in. And then just talking to people and finding out what they want and buying the books. That's what every librarian likes to do, is to buy the books.
Well, get some money to find books.
In those early days, we had a book budget of about $4,000. That's all we had. Mm-hmm. And I can remember then that when we had a very busy day, we had a circulation of 300. We were very, very busy. Now, of course, we have 1,300. Well, this last Wednesday, we had 1,800 people in the circulation. And it doesn't seem too busy even then. Well, we're used to it now and we're better equipped for it. But in that little old church building, 300 at one time was a lot.
What about the heating in the building? That must have been a quiet time.
It was. And sooty and plaster falling off the walls. And of course, in the summer, there was the mowing to take care of. But I did some of that too, yeah. Then we had various kinds of catastrophes. One time there was a blue jay got inside and flapped around the church before we had to get him out. And one time a man fell down the steps. It was like cellar steps that went down from the main floor of the church down to the basement. And this was a terrible thing. We were afraid we'd be sued. But I had somebody on the staff who was very efficient and knowledgeable about what to do, and she made it beautiful. Then always story hours. Mrs. Glacken had been very interested in children's programs and had very built up good children's programs and had good response. I was not a children's librarian, but one had to do what one had to do, so occasionally I would tell stories too. But even that early, I was looking for an out, and when I heard of this woman who was interested in a children's librarian, I contacted her and had her come to tell the stories. This was Mrs. Sidney. Mrs. Sidney was busy having babies most of the time, but for a good many summers, she carried on our story in our tour. And now, finally, we have her on the staff as a coordinator of children's work.
Did she come that first year?
She was almost the first year. I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't too far after she was. Then, of course, I had to learn to drive the bookmobile and take that around in the summertime. I never was wholly responsible for it. We always had somebody who was responsible for it, but in emergencies I could do it.
Were there any emergencies with the bookmobile itself?
No, the emergencies seemed to have happened mostly before I got here. There was one year that it turned over, but the bookmobile was sort of tall and narrow, and you get on the side of the road and it would all tilt over. You had the feeling sometimes that this might happen, but you know, I never had that trouble. But it had happened.
Who took care of the maintenance of this machine?
Of the bookmobile? Well, we had had the thing built by someone through the local garage people. The Chevrolet dealer had bought it for us, and we had it custom built locally, so it was always serviced down there. We never had a problem with that. And
you didn't have to get up there and look under the hood and that sort of
thing. No. Well, whoever drove the bookmobile was responsible for keeping it in gas and oil and checking for tires and that sort of thing. And we've always had people who can drive as well as deal out the books, too. We don't have the kind that
the cities have with a driver and then a separate librarian.
So this is definitely a more kids or adults?
Yes, well, it's kids, I think, except in certain areas now. Up at Cardiff, there's always a group of women who come there and have their. And it gets to be a little social pet that kind of meet on the library and the book and all.
They have a library up there in my country, or a group of the cousins.
Yeah, I think there was one of the early kind of deposits or stations in the early days before the county library came into existence.
You didn't remain here in the Federal Ministry too long after that.
No, even as soon as I came, we were planning to get out and to build a new building. There had been some plans, blueprints drawn up, but they changed a couple of times. We had first planned to expand and build on the site of the old church that moved to some temporary location and pulled down that church and rebuild right there. Then the town came along and offered us another site, which in the end seemed better and even more room. So here we are next to the town hall. But it took a couple of years to build. You see, this building was opened in 1960 in the fall. And that was a very interesting time, making all the plans for enlarging the building. It couldn't be as large. Even when I saw that hole in the ground, I knew it was going to be too small. And sure enough, we didn't have money enough to make it any bigger. But it was too small before we ever moved into it. So, by the way, sometime I'm going to have to sing you my song about library buildings, which came about because we were having some meetings in 1960 for trustees around the state to educate them. And we had planned agenda and invite the trustees from all over the state or in groups in the eastern and the western cities. So I was invited to be, and this particular program was about buildings, and I was invited to be on the agenda, but I was the last one on the program, and there were many notable people ahead of me. I figured they'd have said everything worth saying before they got to me late in the afternoon, and everybody'd be tired and ready to go home. So I puzzled a great deal about what to say about buildings that could be of use to anybody, and I finally decided that I would concentrate on my mistakes. So I wrote a song about the mistakes I had made in building the building and set it to music and sang it with my guitar, and everybody was delighted that they didn't have to listen to another speech. So I became famous then and there as a singing librarian, you think.
Will you put it on tape for us?
Sure, I can. I don't sing very well anymore, but I will do it. But one thing else I wanted to mention about the changes that have occurred over the years in library philosophy. People think so much about librarians and libraries as being staid, cut and dry, and people sitting behind desks just passing out books. They even have the feeling that to be a librarian you must have had an English major in school. But this is not the case at all. And especially nowadays when the whole philosophy of librarianship is to get outside of the library and to take books out to the people or to bring people to take them to people who can't get in, meaning disadvantaged by the people who don't have transportation. Or the people who just wouldn't think about it. You're supposed to go out and trip them up while they're about some other business.
You recently did that, didn't you?
Well, yes, we did. In the gasoline shortage, when everybody was lined up for gasoline, some of our girls took magazines out and handed them out to people who were in the waiting line for gasoline. And that isn't good public relations. I don't know what is. So,
you had said earlier that you had a similar program planned for this week. Are some of the girls late today?
Well, I think the lines aren't as long this week. We're going to wait now until the end of March when they get long again. And then I'm going to send for a television station to come and film them if possible. Because it really was a good thing to do.
And it's doing something good, too.
Yeah. Well, we have a bookmobile round that goes out on Saturdays now into Denbytown and Shirley Avenue and some of the underprivileged or disadvantaged areas. This, too, is an innovation, I believe, at least it is for Harford County, because generally our bookmobile has not gone on Saturdays. And it's only due to the devotion of the staff that they are willing to do this. And during Black History Week, the bookmobile served punch and handed out recipes for soul food to people who came.
Oh, good. Was that a big hit?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Another thing is the films. We have a lot of audiovisual programs out at Haverty Grass where movies, the town movies, have all folded up. There isn't one in Haverty Grass anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the library puts on a Saturday afternoon film program now, and they have 50 kids coming into the library to see the movies.
Is there any fee for this?
No, there's no fee for anything the library does.
Where do you get your films?
We buy them from Inc. Pratt. They have it acts as a state resource center, you see, and they have a film library from which we move on.
How about plans for your own sometimes?
We have tried them here, and they have not been successful. People around in the Bel Air area have too many things to do, and we can't get them to come to the library to film programs. We've tried daytime, we've tried night. The only one that might be successful is a series like Civilization or the Alistair Cook series on America. And we do have that booked for next fall.
You do have some films, though. You have film strips, you have the microfilm.
Yes, we have. But all of our films are borrowed from Pratt. We have a collection of film strips, and some of these go with the story hours, tell a story and show us some pictures.
And you've got the microfilm. You haven't got
Well, this is newspaper. Mm-hmm. The microfilm is we have the Aegis on our newspaper. But I can't think of anything else that we have on microfilm. Well, 8mm films, of course, too, as well. Yes, the library here, they have 8mm films.
Yeah, you don't do any of the filming yourself. This is contracted out, I guess, isn't it?
Well, no, we do just buy them, just like you buy books from our films already made. We do want to have a project with young people sometimes to make films for themselves, but we've never had anybody with the time and energy to go through with that.
Sometimes you have, you're running out of tape here, I wonder, after this. Sometimes you have had some happens with the citizens and some of the books on your show.
Oh, yes.
How do you react to that if somebody objects to a book or whatever?
We have a book selection policy that's written out, and we believe that you cannot impose restrictions too much on people's reading, that they have the privilege of deciding for themselves. We don't want to decide for them what they have to read. You don't want to limit everybody's reading to the 8th grade level. And let's not let anybody read anything offensive at all. But the kicks usually come from parents of teenagers. And most of these cases, Mrs. Sedney will handle in her own way or talk to the parents. They're always very hard to deal with because you know that the parents are concerned about their children's upbringing and their reading, and so are we concerned about them. And it's just that we don't see eye to eye, and they're as convinced that they're right as we are convinced that we're right. But we try to work out each case individually.
Yes.
the whole times are changing so much that you cannot confine your purchases to things without dirty words in them, because scarcely anything is written without dirty words in it now. And the children are up against this in their daily life, so that they find it more natural to read about it than not to read about it. If they find a book that is too goody-goody, it doesn't ring true, and so they don't want it.
Have you ever been threatened with suit of any kind because of this?
No. The worst hassle we had was involved, of course, with the county commissioners themselves, who got into it by mistake. they should not have opened their mouths. And I think that the best thing they could do at that point was just to keep quiet. And that's what eventually they did do until it all passed over.
Well, that was 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, it was more than that now. Yeah. I don't remember exactly, but it was about 65, I believe.
I can't remember the name of the book.
It was called The Horse is Dead. It was a book of black humor which had become popular, and it was very popular with the teenagers. As a matter of fact, the more was written about it, the more people came and reserved the book and asked for it. And even at the community college, many people were writing term papers about it.
It was great.
Yeah. Well, we've had a few not as serious as that, but we have occasionally parents who object to this or that. And if sometimes, of course, we may agree with the patron if they come to us and say, we don't think this book isn't decent, it doesn't have anything really to contribute to the literature, then if we read it and agree with them, we're happy to take the book off.
And what do you do, just stick it downstairs?
Yeah, throw it away, discard it. But
have you done that?
Yes, we have done it. But if it's a book like James Baldwin or somebody who is a literary figure and whom people are going to ask for and whom they have a right to read and decide about for themselves, if it's anything defensible that we can defend, this is good literature, you do not take it off.
It's a pretty safe policy these days, I should think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.